Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Holmgren, along with Nick Balin, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. As I said online last weekend, I apologize, the flu bug got me, but I was able to get out my Derek Lewis interview, so you got to hear him briefly before he absolutely destroyed Travis Brown. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We will talk about GSP. Is it going to be Connor? Is it going to be Bisping? What's it going to be? And then we'll talk, Jędrzejczyk's got her fight ready to go. Is Anderson Silva going to fight Roy Jones Jr.? What other? I mean, it's funny because, like, yeah, there's Bellator tonight. It's Friday night as we're doing this. But outside of that, there really isn't anything of note. But that seems to amp up the crazy when you talk about MMA. And speaking of crazy, we start as Nick. I think there were a lot of people really, really excited last weekend heading into Bellator on Spike. Matt Mitrione and Fedor fighting. And then there was all this discussion leading up as, like, is Bellator catching up? Like, is this, are we finally going to get to that thing that we talked about where it's going to be WCW and WWE going back and forth and, right, like, NWO and, like, this whole wrestling feud was going to happen in the mixed martial arts world. And then the kidney stones showed up and ruined that whole thing. So the bout was scrapped on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Which I don't know that it could have been any worse for Bellator than if it was scrapped moments before. But to me, this just is what screams Bellator to me. Like, that just seems, that's something that in my estimation, as I recall, I don't think has ever happened in the UFC.
Well, okay, so this is just kind of my take on this whole thing. And Scott Coker, everyone loves Scott Coker. All the fighters do. They say that he is a fighter's promoter. And if you ever listen to any of his interviews, he's saying that he actually prefers making the stars of the show the fighters and not the promotion, where the UFC says no, the UFC is the star of the show, and in there is a whole host of fights. So it's actually a perfect example, because when this was scrapped, when this fight card was scrapped, which I had entire plans for that night to sit and watch the entire card
right.
because
yeah.
of the main event, I scrapped that entire plan because I was like, well, without that, I don't need to watch this anymore. So it goes to show you that they're starting to pick up and have stars on there, but they have yet to develop a star that is really drawing them in. They're getting stars, but they're not developing them within their platform.
Well, and like even the things where you would think there would be people mildly interested, right? You get Josh Koscheck getting destroyed by a person that most people don't even know, right? The main event was Pitbull and Josh Thompson, which, while Pitbull's destruction of Josh Thompson was entertaining to watch, again, it's not, you're not getting, as we say on the show all the time, you're not getting the Buffalo Wild Wings fan to go to Buffalo Wild Wings to watch Spike. And I get that it's free, right? But like, people aren't gathering together, as you were just saying, in groups to watch Pitbull and Josh Thompson, on Saturday night at their house. They're just not doing that.
It's actually those fights to me are the perfect filler fights to a really good main event.
Sure.
I'm excited for them. I'm looking forward to it. I know it's two qualified fighters that are going to, you know, have an exciting fight. Even just the fact that Josh Koscheck is on the card, I haven't seen him fight for a while. I'd sit down and watch that.
You didn't see him fight on Saturday either. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
Too soon? Sorry.
But that's the thing, though, is when you are putting the stars or the fighters as the star of the show, when you lose some of those stars, your whole card suffers dramatically because of it.
Yeah, and so, I mean, there, like I said, there's a Bellator tonight, and, you know, what was interesting about this card is that you saw almost in real time, but mostly afterwards, you saw all of the guys that were raising their hand to fight Fedor. Chael Sonnen, who was the closest of them to get in on it, but as Scott Coker said, we had other plans for Chael, and this would have ruined that, meaning, you know, I think we're careening towards this Vanderlei fight, which I know a lot of people are excited about, but that would have been interesting in a Michael Bisping, Luke Rockhold sort of way, right? Like, take the fight on 3 hours notice, and then what happens to your career if you're the guy that beats Fedor's return to the United, you know, all of that stuff. But it was also King Mo was in there, Tito, I think, was in there for a minute, wanted to come out of retirement and fight Fedor. So a lot of people were stepping up to try and save this, but it just ultimately didn't happen, which then moves us to Sunday night, which for a Sunday night card, which I know, Nick, it's really hard to get people fired up for a Sunday night card. All in all, there were some really spectacular performances on this card, not the least of which was I thought Sarah McMahon looked awesome in her, whatever, 84-second destruction.
Right? That was something.
That was something. And then, of course, you've got Derek Lewis and Travis Brown. And we talked to Derek Lewis, and when he was talking to us, I was alluding to the fact that, like, people are just scared to fight him. And one of the reasons they're scared to fight him is because of what happened on Sunday night, is that he's one of those guys where you catch him with a couple body shots, and clearly Travis hurt him with those body shots. You know, I don't know what it is about those bigger fighters. They do not like getting punched in the tum-tum. That is not their favorite thing. But, you know, he got hurt. But he's a guy that you just cannot let him touch you. You can't let him touch you. And if you do, things go really, really badly for you. And if you do, and you happen to be reffed by Mario Yamasaki, you're in a lot of trouble. Because, like, stopping fights clearly is not a core competency of Mario Yamasaki.
He's starting to get some of the Rumble Johnson stink on him. The lore of the, if I touch you, you're going out. And he's showing that now he's got the durability to stand in there and put it down. The thing that's interesting about him is he's doing it in kind of a weird, like, punching pattern, right? He's like, he's not doing the Roy Nelson where he's just going to throw that one overhand. It's always coming from a different angle, and that's what makes him more scary than, say, somebody that just has the big right hand or the Crow Cop head kick. It's always coming from a different angle, and that's what really makes it scary, and that's why you're starting to hear those, like, rumbles of being like Rumble Johnson.
Sure. And, you know, when he was talking to us, he was talking about how he's not the best fighter in the division. He's got a lot of work to do. He echoed that in the post-fight presser. Turns out he broke his foot. So what's next for him is probably a little bit down the road, because that's going to set him back a little bit. I don't know how far that sets him back if we're not going to see him in Nagano, which that's what everyone was screaming for after this fight. But I think with a broken foot, I would be hard-pressed to see Nagano sit out that long and not try and get back in with somebody somewhere and get on the dance card and stay busy, just because you're beginning to see that log jam above Nagano that you don't want to be. You don't want to end up being Jacare, where you just continually to fight people because there's no one actually left to fight because everyone else is booked.
Personally, just because of the average age of the the heavyweight division, I wouldn't mind seeing those guys stay on parallel paths where they're not going to meet until they're either in a title eliminator, which this next fight could be for them, or something where they're fighting both for the championship because one of them either has it or they're coming up in there. Because
and I love that idea, but if you look at what is happening, for all of 2017, those two would have to sit out for most of the year at this point.
Sure.
In order to not cross paths. Now, Derek Lewis, well, I don't think either one of them would do that, because Derek Lewis, you know, when he was talking to us, and again, he said it in the cage when he wasn't asking about where Ronda Rousey was, you know, he's in this for the big fights. He's in this for the money. He talked to us about that Conor McGregor money, and you get that Conor McGregor money by going after big fights regardless of what happens. And south of Nagano, I mean, who on that list would be a big money fight for him?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, to me, like, Mark Hunt would be a great fight. But again, with a broken foot, I don't know if that will work. That might end up being Nagano's thing, as he ends up getting Mark Hunt next. But I'm with you. That would be really fun if those two got two more fights each.
Yeah, it would just be like a nice thing. As I mean, I don't even know. I don't know what Derek Lewis's age is.
I don't actually know either. I'll look up while you're talking.
But just like the length of his career, he's still a young fighter in everyone's mind. He hasn't been around, like, in the household name for that long. So it'd be interesting to see what would happen if they did keep those two apart. But if the UFC has proved anything, it's as soon
85.
As someone...
So
he's got... 85?
No. He's born in 85. So we got plenty of time.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's still good. I mean, that's a spring chicken in the heavyweight division.
Sure.
And so keeping those guys separate for a while. And, I mean, there's enough names in the heavyweight division to still go and, you know, take out a bunch of names. And I mean, it's kind of a dinosaur division right now, and I'd like to see that happen later, but the UFC in the past has always proved that they'll put them together sooner than they can.
Yeah, and I ultimately I think that's what's gonna happen,
because I just don't see with the dance cards matching up that they're gonna let that go for too long. You got Hendricks at 185 against Hector Lombard. Your thoughts on that fight? I mean, I thought Hendricks looked like he was having fun. He did not look like the world beater he looked like at 170, but you know, it's a new weight. It's figuring out your body, you know, all those things. I don't know. You can see things I can't see. I just didn't see a guy that I was like, yeah, he's back and got it all figured out.
Well, I'm asking you all these questions because I'm blanking on them. Is Hector Lombard, he's fought at 170 at one point, didn't he?
Yes, yeah. But then he tested positive for steroids.
Right, which actually furthers my point, is he's still fighting a guy that's equal his size. Like, I don't know if he's, like, what's going to happen when he fights the big 185ers, you know?
Right.
That's, I think, going to be the test. I did see a spark of what he was in the past, and I think that it's going to be something that maybe these weight cuts aren't going to be depleting him, and so his entire fight camp isn't going to be trying to lose those big rig steakhouse pounds that he needs to shed each time.
Yep.
And so maybe he's going to be that person who finds fun in the training again because he's not fighting against the scale.
Yeah, so to just for everyone who's listening, to you can remember how this all went down. He went to 170, beat Marquardt, beat Jake Shields, beat Josh Berkman and tested. Then went against Neil Magny and lost, then went back up to 85 and lost to Dan Henderson with a head kick, and then lost a unanimous decision to Johnny Hendricks. So now we're here.
Yeah, so there's a certain skid that's happening in that career.
Yeah. Turns out that thing isn't – that's not a great idea for you.
Right.
But, you know, I had read an article that, you know, there's some discussion about adding more weight classes to kind of curtail some of this stuff and get these guys back to where they should actually be, because these cuts aren't good for your body. And they put, you know, while the Matt Mitrione issue was not anything having to do with weight cut or anything like that, but like, you highly increase your probability of bad stuff happening to your organization when you've got dudes that are cutting from 200 down to 55, right? Like, that's a bad day. And so, and until we've gotten to the point, and there's been a number of scenarios fleshed out, but until you get to the point, Nick, where they're doing camp check-ins and telling you you're off weight so the match is off, you know what I mean? Like, until they're doing that, I like to see these guys that are trying another shot at a different weight class who have clearly had some issues at 70, and Hendricks is one of those guys who had a tremendous amount of difficulty getting to 85. Now, you... decisions, Lombard, I didn't think you looked particularly spectacular. It looked fun. You looked good. I'm glad you're back on the winning track. But to your point, like, you got Jacare over there. You got Yoel over there. You have Bisping, who, whatever your opinion of Bisping is, my friends, I'll tell you that that's a dude that figures out how to win. So you better be ready to, like, lose it all in the ring, because he's a guy who just, in that second fight with Dan Henderson, I mean, like, Dan threw everything he, like, literally everything he had left at that kid, and he ended up winning, you know, Bisping ends up winning that fight. So it's not like going up, you're finding guys that are at Lombard's level, because they're well above Lombard's level at this point.
Well, and it's interesting to see that it's jumping into a weight class that is already a logjam at the top. I mean,
we were just talking about Jacare, right? Like, he, to me, he's the champ. You just haven't given him the belt yet.
Right.
And until somebody fights him, you know, yeah, you've got this logjam, and a logjam that I don't know how you break it up, because, you know, there's one other person who jumped into the logjam seemingly this week, which makes it even more difficult for Jacare to get his comeuppance.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, obviously at this, you're alluding to GSP and his signing. What's going to be interesting is, which way does he go? Is he the same size and same person that he was before, or is he a leaner person because he's been out of the fights for a while and he can go down, which obviously that sounds more like a Conor McGregor fight, or is he thicker and that sounds like a challenge for the title at 185?
Now, for me, and this is a great segue, you know, for me, this ends up being interesting for a couple of reasons. The more interesting fight, and obviously the big money fight, is at 55 in Conor McGregor, and might be the only thing that cools the Mayweather talk at this point, because that would be the only thing I think that would be interesting for McGregor to kind of put one more notch on the bedpost, so to speak, of people that he has destroyed in this organization. However, you know, guys like Diz on Twitter. You can find him at Talk MMA or Front Row Brian. Like, those guys who've got the inside track, they all seem to be leaning towards Bisping and a title fight at 85 as being the thing that GSP is going to come back to do. So I don't know if he's thick. To your point, I don't know if he's thicker, doesn't want to do the weight cut or whatever the deal is. But that appears to be closer than the McGregor fight. Although at this recording, which is late Friday afternoon, we have nothing signed. So once I hit send and something gets signed, I apologize. But as of right now, we've got nothing on the books.
And, I don't know what his stance was on IV rehydration before, because he always could. It was totally legal.
Sure.
I don't know how many people know about it. Most fighters would do IV rehydration all the way down to amateurs if they could find a person that could do it for them, all, yep. You know, to the highest level. And he was always an extremely lean guy, and you'd see him significantly bulked up after his weigh-ins compared to what he looked like in the ring. So I don't know what his stance was or if he did use them, but most people did. So maybe that cut would be too much for him now just from that perspective alone.
And with age, right? With age, yeah. You go up in weight classes. You'll see, you guys will see that same thing with when John Jones comes back. In probably a year or two, he'll be a heavyweight just because that cut will be too much, or it'll just be nicer for him to power lift all the way up to 65 and just be a ridiculous beast. Would be a scary prospect at heavyweight. But I think as people get older, you're going to see that. And you saw it when Cormier came over, right? There was all this talk, like, could he even make it down to 205? And he's clearly figured that out for now. But A, how much longer? And if he doesn't get Jones in the next 24 months, whenever that whole thing kind of fleshes itself out, does he go up to heavyweight? Well, not if Kane's still there, right? Because they don't want to be on a collision course. Maybe he retires or whatever. But to your point, I think this thing becomes a lot for the body to deal with, especially when you've been out as long as he has and doing whatever else you've been doing. And by that, I mean, like, whatever exercise you've been doing. You haven't been doing exercises to keep your body at 172. You've been doing whatever you wanted to do, all the gymnastics you can do, all the CrossFit, all the whatever. And now you've got to put that all back in line with a diet and regimen that gets you to whatever this weight is, which I'm hoping is 85, because I think that would be a good place for him to start.
Well, what would be interesting in the whole thing is, like you were saying about adding more weight classes, the UFC has proven that they love champions. And so introducing...
They do love champions.
Yeah, and I mean, they're handing out the belts now all over the place and adding divisions in the women's division, and I'm all for that. I mean, the cuts are the weight classes, the jumps are quite large, and we're talking about everybody all day today from anywhere from 170 to that 205 division, and that's where those big jumps and big cuts are happening. So it would be interesting to see, because I believe that since they've put in the early weigh-ins and then the ceremonial weigh-ins later, there's been more people missing weight because of those early weigh-ins, and that was to try to prevent that from happening so that their cut could be easier and they'd have longer time to rehydrate. But really, I think what it's doing is proving difficult, because they're trying to go to bed on an empty stomach, wake up at weight because they have to go there, you know, so now they're getting less sleep that night or whatever. And, Johnny Hendricks is jumping up a weight class from that. So obviously that's not proving to be easier by going to those earlier weigh-ins.
No, and I think this is just a case to me of, like, you're trying to do something good and it has an unintended consequence. Because clearly weighing in at 10 a.m. and having 12 hours to eat and relax and, you know, or I'm sorry, not even 12 hours, now 36 hours, right? I'm thinking it's the same day. Having 36 hours to kind of have almost two full days of regular eating and diet and water and blah, blah, blah is good for your body. The downside, as you clearly alluded to, is that night before, clearly there was a lot of other shenanigans happening to make you get to that 4 p.m. wait, 4 p.m. here. So noon wait time in Vegas, you clearly were doing some other stuff that you no longer have time to do, which is why a lot of these people are missing that weight.
Yeah, and it's personally, like, I've cut weight before and, you know, I've ran that game and I would like the morning one because that's just what my routine was. But what they did the best, and you'll see this in tournaments, say like Muay Thai tournaments, which I used to participate in, and it would be like you'd have a window to weigh in and it was a 4-hour window.
Sure.
The first time they did the early weigh-ins, that's what they did. You had a 4-hour window. You could go in from like noon till 4 or whatever their window was. And the nice thing about that is it's as soon as your heartbeat that drops you down to the weight class that you want to get to is on, you go right to the scale, you weigh in, and you're good. Then they said, wow, that worked out so well. Let's just make it that earlier time. And then you got rid of the window again, so you have people missing weight. So it's it's not necessarily helpful for those guys. And I think that's why you're seeing some of these weight jumps. And that's what's interesting about GSP coming back, is actually where does he fit in and how does his weight cut routine change now?
Mm-hmm. And because he has not been through this, guys. He hasn't been through any of the changes. And what will be more interesting is, as you've seen the changes with the organization as a whole, is they've clearly figured out some way to come to an agreement between Under Armour and Reebok or something, right? Because that was the big hang-up, is that GSP is Under Armour, UFC is Reebok. So they figured something out. I don't know what that's going to be, but they figured something out.
Do you think it's just Reebok giving up at this point because they're so sick of their relationship with them?
Well, I mean, but we still have 4 years left, right? It was a 6-year deal. So, I mean, this seems pretty premature in the dating phase to be like, I'm done with this, you know? And, you know, we'll figure that stuff out for another day. You know, before we, you know, there's not a UFC this week, so we won't spend a whole lot of time just droning on. But the one thing I did want to ask, because we had a press conference yesterday between Nurmagomedov and our boy from Muskegon, Tony Ferguson, that got a little heated. What are your thoughts? Like, in like 30 seconds, we don't need to get into the, we'll do all that stuff next week. But like in 30 seconds, like, what are your thoughts of this fight? You know, is this... is Nurmagomedov clearly as untouchable as everyone seems to think he is, or is Ferguson the kryptonite for that whole division?
This is going to be, I think, the best proven ground for Nurmagomedov in this one, because Tony is so unorthodox. It's just, he's been able to really, he's shown that he can handle every style so far, and he's just kind of road graded everybody that he's came across. But I just don't think that Tony Ferguson is someone to be road graded. He's just not that kind of person. He's not built like that. It's not something that's going to happen to him. So I would actually, in this fight, take Tony over Nurmagomedov. Wow. Nurmagomedov?
You got me doing it. Nurmagomedov, sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I think that this is a great matchup. And, in fact, I'm more excited for this fight than the main event of that card. So that's the one that I'm looking forward to, who is Woodley and Thompson.
Yeah, no, and I'm looking at you not because I don't know what it is, but because I'm not really sure I can agree with you, just because I think that fight's also spectacular. But what I love about – I love them both for different reasons, and then we'll let you guys go for the weekend. But what I love about this Nurmagomedov-Ferguson fight is I think it clearly tells you – what the future of that division is going to be. Because the future of that division may or may not be McGregor. That's not what I'm saying. But it's showing you that if Ferguson wins, that guys like McGregor and guys like Ferguson are going to give people fits and starts for this phase of combat sports. If Nurmagomedov wins, it means that there's still a place for these Russian wrestler sambo insane human beings that can just plow you on the ground from anywhere that they grab a hold of you and do tremendous damage. So I love that, because that's why we got into the sport. That is styles make fights. That's what's going on there. The main event I like because I'm fascinated with what happens when guys who go that close. I mean, we're talking a point one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And we could argue that all day long, but it's a point one way or the other. When it's that close, what does that second one look like? You know, is it that close again, or did somebody figure out the Rubik's Cube?
Well, and that fight was just so interesting from styles make matchups, and Woodley was purposely putting his back on the cage so that he could get draw Thompson in and, you know, change up the fight. And everyone was wondering why he was doing that, and that was a plan all along. And it really is, like, I mean, this is, to me, this is the showdown. It is Khabib, Tony, and then Woodley, Thompson. I personally think that they put the Khabib Tony underneath of that just in case something happened with the main event.
Yep. Oh, for sure.
That they could fill in right away. And if it's not what happens in the Woodley Thompson fight, if that fight does happen, then you've got Khabib and Tony stepping up for the next one. And they're still on that. As long as everyone's healthy, they're on the same path to get a quick turnaround in another title fight.
You've totally now jinxed it, right?
Like, yeah. Right. Whoops.
The rest of that card, though, you got Rashad back on this. You got Overeem and Mark Hunt, which I think is super exciting. So we're back on with really some interesting fights. because we clearly we didn't really talk very much about the new women's champion, but that card sucked as much as we told you it was going to suck. So this will be a breath of fresh air, as this has a bunch of fights on it that have huge implications. Thank God it's not in New York, where judges and refs have no idea what's going on. And we will leave it there, but we'll talk about it next week. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.